She raked and thought if only the twins could see, if they could live with the garden the way she did, covered or uncovered, leafed or bare, the garden was restorative in any season.
Today on Arts and Letters, we'll be talking with novelist and short story writer Christine Scott about her story, The Duchess of Albany, which imagines a widow, a garden, two daughters, and a beloved dog named Pink.
Gardening and writing are very, very similar. I've watched my husband garden and the garden he's made over the last 20 years, and the same kind of editing applies. You have to move things, and things don't work, and you're never satisfied.
The Duchess of Albany on Arts and Letters.
The Duchess of Albany. The garden dies with the gardener, was what Owen had said. But when years later he died, she faced the garden with a will to keep it alive, as who would not? But the twins urged her to sell. They thought it would be wise to move out of the house. For too long, too large, and into Wax Hill, with its assisted care conveniences and attached hospital. Wax Hill, that short line to the furnace and the thoroughfare.
From the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities. Today, we'll be talking with novelist and short story writer Christine Scott about one story in particular from her collection, Pure Hollywood, The Duchess of Albany, about a widow and a garden.
My very much alive husband is a master gardener, and he has a beautiful, beautiful garden in Maine. And it's worried me what will happen to this garden. And he's very matter-of-fact about it, and the line, the garden dies with the gardener, is something that he's said to me on more than one occasion. And so I thought about it, and I simply decided to put it to test. Does the garden die with the gardener?
Christine Scott and her story of loss and mourning and new beginnings. On Arts and Letters.
She had carried Owen's chalky bones in a bag. She had tossed him into every part of the garden. How could she sell the house when from every window in the house, and there were lots of windows, she could see some part of him, Owen, her well-named spirit with meaty gardener's hands and other contradictions. He liked the slow and melancholy. He listened to St. Matthew's Passion long after Easter. But God, he didn't believe. Young once, he saw himself alone when he was old with just a daughter. He left behind two, not of his own making, but full of reverence for him nonetheless. Sometimes you put things in a story and in terms of making up his character, I thought he would be the kind of person who would listen to glorious but very, very sad music, even as the seasons are moving. It was just sort of an odd element to the character. And he's a lapsed Catholic. There's a part of him, which I think, I don't know, that he still would like to cover all the bases, perhaps. He was a school teacher, and the luggage-colored oak leaves signaled his season, but it had come around so fast. He had had nuns for cousins. Nuns! Sisters of Charity! How queer they seem now, their menace vanished. Mustachioed Agnes Gertrude and arthritic Mary Agnes. They had taught at the Mount for 40-odd years, wimpled and sudden, full of authority. She said, I haven't seen a nun in such a long, long time.
Christine Scott, former teacher, beautiful reader, and novelist, as well as short story writer of Pure Hollywood. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
We're so proud to have you here. What a beautiful story. And this story really it just affected me immensely for so many reasons, but primarily because you just capture not only age, but this woman and her world just so well. But I think it's not just her world. It just seems to me an anthem for people who are here.
The twins, on conference call, were hard to tell apart except when they laughed. She didn't have a lot to say and lapsed into what the weather was doing. Today's snow, the second snowstorm of the new year, and Owen, once in it, she could see him, lopsided, clowny, a scarf around his head. Blizzardy weather was wonderful to walk in. Oh, mother, from the twins when she cried. Overly dramatic, yes, she knew. She was being, but she missed him. The wide road he had offered her each morning, saying, what's on your agenda? Now that wide road had all the charm of a freeway. Take a walk, the twins said, if it's snowing. Inward would be a nice word for what she was. Self-absorbed would be more accurate. I think if you're very lucky in this life and you're happily companioned, you worry very much, I do, about the loss of someone you love so much and how you might behave. And so that was something else that was very much on my mind when I was writing this. And so that's what put it into motion.
So the notion of gardens, the suddenness of life's accidents,
mm-hmm.
and the loneliness of the seasons.
Yes. Yes. I know the country is at war, she said. Nevertheless, she missed him. Besides, when I look at the larger world, I cry almost as much. But Owen, his voice, the sound of him in another room, off-key hummer, cracking nuts over the paper, singing or whistling a patter song, a Gilbert and Sullivan tune, twiddled for days.
As someday it may happen that a victim must be found. I've got a little list. I've got a little list of society offenders who might well be underground and who never would be missed, who never would be missed. There's the pestilential nuisances who ride for autographs, all people who have flabby arms and irritating...
The lady novelist, she surely won't be missed. Whatever he thought to play or heard was his favorite G and S. I've got a little list, she surely won't be missed.
He's got them on the list, he's got them on the list. Then they'll none of them be missed. No, they'll none of them be missed.
So help us with the spirit of Owen here. He is the garden, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to keep that alive.
Yes.
Even though he's passed.
Yes. Yes. And he was someone who clearly, in her own mind, was a constant, unlike the garden in some ways, always kindly and receptive and responsive to her and interested in her. And it would seem he's not interested in other people. He wants to be left alone.
As does she.
Yes, as does she. They're very contented. It's a very happy life. as it can be, I think.
All children who are up in dates and floor you with them flat. All persons who, when shaking hands, shake hands with you like that.
I think that there's a moment in the permanence of his absence. It's the quiet, the terrible quiet that isn't quiet. That's what's interested me just in being in places alone when my family or my husband, when they're gone. Well, how are you going to fill that up?
And all third persons who on spoiling tete-a-tetes insist that none of them be missed, that none of them be missed. He's got them on the list, he's got them on the list, and they'll none of them be missed, no, they'll none of them be missed.
The Gilbert and Sullivan business is a bit more pointed because the patter song that is being sung has to do with I've got a little list. It's from the Mikado, where he says, I've got a little list of all the people I could easily axe. And the lady novelist is a joke. Gilbert and Sullivan thought it was a good joke. And since she's writing a poem and there is this English teacher, there is some suggestion that the woman in question in the story has ambitions to write.
You're listening to Arts and Letters. We're talking with Christine Scott about her story, The Duchess of Albany. We'll be back in a moment. This is Arts and Letters. Let's return to our conversation with short story writer and novelist Christine Scott as she talks about her story, The Duchess of Albany.
Some nights now she plunged into working, but some mornings vodka was preferred. She had to admit it to herself, but not to the twins. She told them, I have started a Sistina. She said she was inspired by Elizabeth Bishop's Sistina, and she was using two of the same words. Time to plant tears was what moved me. Sistinas are difficult, the twins said. Her educated daughters, they knew, they had tried.
And So she fills it up in several ways.
Yes.
One is drinking.
Yes.
Two is writing a Sistina.
Yes.
So in the teacher in you, will you just tell us what a Sistina is?
It's a very elaborate pattern where you're using six words, and in the end, you use all of them in two lines. In high school, Mother, remember Miss Bird? Oh, Miss Bird. And they had a rare good laugh, the three of them, she and the twins, remembering the ethereal teacher, giddy and overworked and walking into walls. The twins laughed about Miss Bird getting lost in the mall on the Boston trip.
I love the teacher in you just a little bit here for me, because Miss Bird,
yes,
makes them write Sistinas.
Yes.
And I'm sure that,
yes,
was a torturous experience,
yes,
for the twins.
I never asked my students to do that. I had a colleague, though, who was really quite remarkable, and she had them write sonnets, which are equally difficult. And I remember that very well, because they had to write the sonnet, and then they had to memorize it and recite it in front of the class. And so many of them broke down and cried.
Oh.
So that was a sad experience.
Memorable experience.
So no, I never asked, but there are certainly schools where that would happen. The twins were laughing, and she was laughing a little too, when the sight of the old dog asleep alarmed her, and all of a sudden, in the whiplash moodiness of bygone youth, she was mad at Owen. Damn him! There's no pleasure to be had in discipline and restraint, she said to the twins. That's what a damn Sistina is all about. And so the pleasure of laughing was over.
She thinks and says there's no pleasure to be had in discipline and restraint.
Yes.
So there's always this push-pull, right?
Yes.
Why would she say that to them?
There's no pleasure in the discipline.
That I am trying to be disciplined.
But I'm drinking.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yes. And I'm free to do it.
What I want.
Yeah. I'd like to have this order. I'm trying to work on a poem that is so stiff and requires so much concentration that I will not be thinking about. I will create something else. I do believe that writing is certainly a way of figuring out how you feel and how you think, and it can help you in mourning. My own experience is my first novel, Florida, was written for a long time, 10 years. But my mother was dying in all of those years. She had dementia, and I was angry at her, and I was full of sorrow and all of those things. And she was very much in that first novel. And so that when I came out of writing it, and not so long after I finished it, my mother did die, I felt I'd done all of my mourning in the book, and that I was relieved of that. I'd said everything I would ever have to say about my mother. Some cousins of mine were really distressed that I did not speak at a memorial service for her. Mm. And at the time, all I could say is, I've written this book. I don't know what happened with it, but I've said everything I have to say. There would be nothing I could say. In this writing of the Sestina, which is a much smaller form and much more demanding, I saw that as a way of coming to terms.
Let's hear a little bit more from the story.
"Why, mother," one voice, the other said, "you've been drinking." She said, "I don't have to defend myself. Besides," she explained, "the drinking was a problem only if she drove, and I don't." She stayed at the table or slept in the big chair, and no one need worry. She might die there. No mess. Mother, all I'm saying is you can't have much of an accident if you sit somewhere with a drink. You have to get up for the bottle. Only Clarissa would say that. Here was the difference between her girls. One was meaner than the other. "I bring the bottle to the table." "Oh, great, mother, that's just great. Now do you see why we don't want to call?" "Then don't, leave me alone." And she hung up the phone and almost kicked at the dog, but she refrained.
At one point, I love the line where you say, she almost kicked the dog, or she wanted to kick the dog. She's angry at this dog, but the dog is a little like Owen, and she's angry he died.
It's his dog, obviously. Yeah. He was a kind one who adopted the dog and took on something that she probably would not have taken. There's something harder in her, the fact that she can recognize the meaner daughter. I mean, she knows full well which daughter perhaps is most like her. So, I mean, I see Owen as being the charitable figure. The dog was her friend, Owen's dog, Pink. "Poor old Pink," she said, and she leaned out to pat a shapeless pile of fuzz and spoke nonsense to it. Pink, adopted, a miniature mix of something abandoned and abused. Pink was hairless at the start. "Look at you now, you little dustcloth baby, Pink. Oh, sweetie, I wouldn't hurt you. You're my pal." "I'm on the move today," she said, but the dog lay unperturbed, sure she would come back.
In a sense, she was lonely before a little bit. I mean, there's a sense of loneliness.
Yes.
But now she's alone.
Yes.
She has Pink, but she
right,
doesn't talk.
She doesn't talk. And she's, yes. And one can on occasion have very conflicting feelings about a pet, a much beloved pet.
So the relationship with the pet is, there's an antipathy.
Yes.
What about the daughters? They worry about her. I mean, yes. They are concerned about the yes. drinking, and they say they're trying to help, although yes. that's always the yes. phrase that will kill you.
I don't have daughters, but I was a daughter. So when I have mother-daughter relations, obviously my own relations with my mother will enter into some extent. And also I taught girls.
Oh, you did?
All girls.
Oh.
So I knew high school girls, and I knew their mothers, and I knew their relationships. And they were always, I mean, there were some very lucky mothers who had very, very happy relationships with their daughters, and it was mutual. But most of the time I saw it as one where the daughters sometimes think the way they're judging their mother is on the mark. That she is needful of them, that she is herself perhaps too sentimental. Well, they change the name sometimes. Sometimes when it's mother, it's usually, and they're reprimanding. When they say mommy, it's meant to suggest that they're trying to be maternal. A snowstorm, a thaw, a brilliant sun, snow, freezing temperatures, snow, then better, warmer, promising weather arrived. And she looked back at Pink and then to the rake and the garden where the wet mahogany islands of leaves submerged for months in snow now floated. All the snow pelted away by a rain the night before and only a mist this morning, something more than fog. She liked to work in it. She thought of Owen's hair, water beaded and in the sun brightly netted. She raked and thought if only the twins could see, if they could live with the garden the way she did, covered or uncovered, leafed or bare, the garden was restorative in any season. The persistent mist was turning into rain. March, late March, somebody's birthday. Whose? She abandoned Pink to the mud. She raked the beds. She swept the pavers. Dirty girl, she said when the dog wobbled toward her. Why had she even taken the poor mutt out? The dog trembled and squeaked. The six words in her Sistina are garden, widow, husband, dog, almanac, tears. The envoy is an oncoming train, she said. Restrain the wild element of mourning, or what you get is sentimentality.
And she says, restrain the wild element of mourning, or what you get is
sentimentality.
And she doesn't want that.
No, she doesn't want to be sentimental. No. I mean, I think she's a little off in that remark, too. I mean, if you really overdo it, you're going to certainly be sentimental. So on the one hand, she wants all permission to drink and to be angry and to kick the dog. And on the other hand, she wants to prove Owen wrong. The garden will not die with the gardener because I love the gardener and I am here and I will sustain his good work. And I am capable of seeing him and rejoicing in the things that we had.
And she's a little sad for her daughters, it seems, she says.
Oh, yes.
Poor girls in the disarray of single life.
Yes.
The yap, yap, yap of the dryer at the laundromat. These are girls sitting at the laundromat.
Yes.
Beating up their tired clothes. Few single men.
The twins. She should listen to them. Sell, move, secure what there was to secure for them. Poor girls in the disarray of single life, the yap, yap, yap of the dryer at the laundromat beating up their tired clothes. Few single men where they lived, and the best of them gay. The rain was cold, but she let herself get wet the way Owen did until she was soaked. In the kitchen again, she lit up the stove and watched the rain wash the garden into its outline. Green spikes stippled the beds she had raked, and the cropped crowns of established plants, the wheat-colored stalks of hydrangea, poked out, polished in a design of circles mostly. If her daughters could only see. How is it possible that in caring for the garden she could miss summer? How is it possible? But she did. Up at 4 and again at 5 and at 5:30 up for good. Pink was awake. She heard the dog tick against the bare floor circling the bed. Good morning, she said, and she went on talking to Pink as she carried the dog down the stairs and to the paper. Because it's too cold outside, isn't it, Pinky? I'm not going to do what I did yesterday. Too cold and wet this morning.
It seems to me that twins and she have a very different sense of time.
Yes.
At this moment.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And she misses a whole summer, which perhaps can happen.
Sure.
You are not aware. You're just acting automatically. She saw 45 on the thermometer. The radio said it was colder. She got water, aspirin, more water. She put on deodorant, then went back to bed. For how long? Who cared? She was up again. Besides, she washed her hair and dried it in the heat of the open oven. Once, she had thought it would be hard to let go of life. But it will not be so hard. She read. She wrote. She must have had lunch, but she could not remember. The scenes that blew past came out in bands of color. The wispy complication of bare branches was added magic.
We talked about this paragraph, and it really just stunned me. I thought it was just so beautiful. She read, she wrote. It's just so evocative. I don't know. For me, it's really almost the center of the story, too.
Mm.
The idea of magic and her conjuring him up, but she can't with words. She can only conjure the shape of him.
Yes.
Is she trying to conjure him up with the words she's writing?
Yes, yes, yes. The shadows were dark and sure. She put Owen in her palm. Owen, or the shape of him on the deck in his coat and pom-pom hat. A passenger on a steamer, a blanket over his legs, heavy sweater, scarf, the silly hat. The garden beyond him, she turned into straw.
She's trying to make him live.
Yes.
But she can't. Do it. Words just don't do it.
Right. That's right. Exactly. That was, yes.
Yeah. And just trying to conjure him up, trying to bring him back in everything, in the conversations with the daughters, in the with the garden, and then with the dog.
Yes.
And he's gone.
Yeah.
And she knows it.
Yes.
But I don't think she wants to know it.
No.
Yeah.
No. Why did she lie to the twins? Why, when they called, did she say, I am not drinking. I am working. Why didn't she tell them, I'm doing both? The brief hello of summer and its long, long goodbye. Great piles of death she hauled to the woods, to the dead pile and tossed. Farewell to the flowers of summer, plume poppy and vernonia, Turk's cap lilies, delicate as paper lanterns at the height of their glowing. Goodbye.
This is Arts and Letters. We're listening to author Christine Scott talk about her short story, The Duchess of Albany. We'll be back in a moment. Let's return to author Christine Scott as she talks about her short story, The Duchess of Albany, and her deceased husband Owen's imprint
on everything that surrounds her.
Overnight, age seemed to happen to him. Then a few years of ifs, poor health, medication. "Don't talk of moving just yet, please," she told the twins. "Not tonight." Why, except for loneliness, did she answer the phone? Owen, at the long table, saying to the ringing phone, "Go away, people, leave us alone." And people pretty much did. To get off the phone, she used the excuse of Pink somewhere sick. The odd thing was, when she did hang up, she found Pink in the closet, sick. "Poor baby," she said. "Old age," said the vet. He gave Pink pills that worked to ward off motion sickness, which sometimes happened to old pets, despite their stationary lives. "She will sleep a little bit more." "A good night's sleep," she said. "Wouldn't that be nice?" They talked a little, she and the old vet, for he too was old. They talked about Owen, or she did, and he asked, "Have you looked for any groups?" On the drive home in the rain, she cried, and she couldn't see to drive, and she had to pull over. "Damn it! Old vet!" She put her face in her hands and cried. She petted Pink and cooed, saying, "We won't go back there again, will we, Pinky? No, no, but you feel better already, don't you?" The little dog was a dust ball. Just petting Pink made her feel awful. "Do I have to outlive everybody?" Yes. 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 "No," she said. "The lily of the valley is up." She said, "Yes." It was 2 years ago today. "We wanted you to know we're thinking about you," the twins said, and the girls called again later just to see how she was. "How are you, Mommy?" they asked in maternal voices. "The lily of the valley is up," she said. May, his birthday month and hers, when she and Owen quietly celebrated with nothing more than mild surprise, he was given to saying, "I think I'm going to see another spring." And he did. Just. Heart. Of course his heart. What else? Now the oppressive, immovable quality of objects wore her out.
Now the oppressive, immovable quality of objects, and they just wore her out.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes when I've been in our apartment and my husband's gone and he's been gone for a while and there is that kind of terrible quiet that's not quiet and the furniture and it's everything looks different. Mother, whatever was not in front of her, she meant to remember, his shapely head, his small red ears, his hair. "You've been drinking. We can tell. We knew you would. So why act so surprised?" She hung up the phone and saw the damn dog peeing on the floor in front of her. They had not had enough time, she and Owen. "I'm no such thing," she said to the twins. "Another night. I'm tired. Another. I'm old, is what it is." Owen had said that in the garden she would rediscover childhood, but those childhood experiences she remembered were mostly dreadful. She took her nose out of the flower, and her cousin, seeing her, laughed. "Your nose!" The red was hard to get off, as were grass stains on her knees and elbows. Childhood in the garden. The garden was full of thugs, and Owen had shown her some. The Duchess of Albany was not a thug, but a racer on a brittle stem, a clematis with deep, pink, upside-down bells, deceptively frail and well-bred, small, timorous bells. The Duchess of Albany was a favorite of hers. How could she sell the house to someone who might kill the Duchess in the earth-moving business of house improvement?
So, what is the Duchess of Albany?
There is actually a clematis called the Duchess of Albany. And I love the common names of flowers. And I love the name of the Duchess of Albany, and I love that clematis. And we had such a clematis in the garden. And she was so delicate and timorous. The woman who's writing this Sestina and who's mourning her husband is not exactly the Duchess of Albany by any means. But if you could keep the Duchess alive, you would be a very competent gardener. So you don't want the men with their heavy boots coming in and shoveling and crunching around in the back, because sometimes when people buy houses and there are gardens, the people who come in to do the renovation just stomp about.
Yeah.
Men came, yes, she said to her daughters. But they have such big feet, she said. They can't help it, I know. Mommy, the twins said, we're only trying to help. So was she. Hadn't she consented to the ugly tub? That ugly tub with the roughed bottom and the grips? Her children have not visited in years. Oh, mother, they say, what are you talking about? She took her own safety precautions and moved her bedroom, such as it was, downstairs to the sun porch. On the sun porch and the sofa, she was not afraid to fall asleep. What made Pink nest in corners? What do you think is the matter? She asked. Pink's old, Mommy. The dog's ancient. Take her to the vet. Oh, God, she said. Going to the old vet frightened her as much as it did the dog. Oh, she said, she felt so bogged down and muddled. You're drunk is what you are. From the meanest? Oh, she said, I don't want to find a stiff dog under the desk. I don't, she cried, and the twins consoled her. Mommy, why don't you crawl into your cream puff and go to sleep for a while? You and the dog, have a snooze. She said, I think I will. She said, Pink doesn't realize I have mixed feelings about her. She takes up the dog, who is as needful as she is in one way or another, and she comforts the dog as best she can and wraps the dog up. And you know that miles to go before we sleep. And both times the sleep is different. So I saw that way in some ways. I'm curling up into my cream puff, and I'm going to sleep, and you're going to sleep.
Yeah.
And
yeah, help us with the cream puff image. She's curling up in her bed or
yes,
herself?
Yes,
or?
No, it's cream puff is sort of it was meant to be the suggestion of just getting into your quilt and getting all puffy and warm.
Oh,
and
sure.
And you could almost bury yourself in it.
And but she does that with the dog too.
Yes. She had found him in an odd posture, tipped against the shed. The hose was squiggled over half the garden, and elsewhere were two full buckets, a shovel, a rake. How she had wished for his sake Owen had put away the tools and coiled the hose and achieved a perfect death, although the twins yelled at her for saying such a thing. But the morning after he died, the terrible morning after, repeats so many times a day. She woke up, dressed, walked downstairs, made her gritty breakfast drink, and took her tea outside. Then she saw it, the grain bin, where he kept his garden clothes, and she fell to her knees and cried. Up to that moment, she had sipped at her tea and believed he was alive and already in the garden and muddy. The permanence of his absence is a noise she hears when she listens to. How quiet. How he did for her.
Can I be of any help?
Always he asked this.
Do you want anything? Can I get you anything?
She does talk about Owen's death in the last section.
Mm-hmm.
She wished he could achieve the perfect death.
Mm.
What would the perfect death have been?
In her mind, every evening he would, as a gardener does, I mean, a good gardener certainly cleans up and is very tidy after the day's work.
Mm-hmm.
And puts everything away, or at least everything's in its place. It's not, the hose isn't squiggled about, and there's just not that disarray. To have died in the garden, that at some level would be as close to probably a kind of paradise for him as
sure.
any, but it would have been perfect had everything
been
in
its place.
And then we sit down, you know, on a bench and look at our handiwork. And
what I thought was really a nice move here, too, just as a writer, was you don't talk about the death much, but you talk about the morning after.
Yeah.
It's a terrible morning. Morning, M-O-R, M-O-R.
Yes.
You write M-O-R, but it's M-O-U-R, too.
Yes.
And the morning, M-O-U-R, so many times she wakes up, she gets dressed, she goes into her own, and she expects he'll be there.
Yes. Yes.
But and then she sees the clothes and the grain bin.
Yes.
And she can't. She knows he's not. And that's every day, right?
Yes. Yes.
But especially the morning after.
Especially the morning after. And there's a certain element, I'm sure, where you're just... She thought it was summer still, if not spring, but the day's evidence said it was fall again. When was the last time you were outside, Mommy? I'm taking care of the garden, she told them. Her nose was in it, brushing against the staining anthers, freakishly marked, a bald animal. She, a stiff, kinked dog. Not unlike the dog she owned. Pink. Pink. What was the matter with that dog? After she got off the phone, she caught her in the act and pulled her away, made her stop, put Pink out of doors like that, then wiped up after her. She brought Pink inside and carried Pink to her bed in the kitchen and talked to her. But even as she apologized for the chokehold, a part of her wished Pink dead, and another part feared her dying. And she took Pink upstairs and bathed her in the new tub. Her pink skin was so pink, she looked scalded. She was thin. Pink shivered, though she was gentle and the water was warm. She dried Pink with her own soft towel. And when the dog was dried and happy and at ease, she swaddled and rocked Pink. She was so pitifully thin. She put the little dog in her cream puff and said, I'm getting into mine.
So help us here with the end with Pink. What a interesting way to end it. I was wondering how you were going to end it. And it would make sense. We kind of move back to the dog. She's on the phone and she's like, I'm taking care of the garden. Mm-hmm. They don't believe it. She's writing the Sistina. They don't believe it. You're drinking. Mm-hmm. We need you out of the house. Mm-hmm. And then something's wrong with the dog. Mm-hmm. And she wants to make the dog clean. Help us with the ending here. A part of her feared dying, and she took Pink upstairs.
As she just does not want to find something else dead. She's found her husband dead. She doesn't want to find the dog dead. I mean, it just seems too much. But then she sort of changes, and she takes her, and she does bathe her.
And this may be a big stretch, but mm-hmm. it seems to me, just like reading it more analytically, that maybe the dog was the emblem of Owen, but now she sees the dog as her.
Mm. Oh, I think that there is very much, the dog is very much.
As she sees the frailty, she sees herself. She sees herself as the twins see her a little
bit. Yes, right.
Maybe there's an awakening a little bit. She sees herself and says, I do have to do a little something else. I have to change a little bit.
Yes. Let's just have a good night's sleep and we'll get warm and swaddle. Yes, I'm getting into mine. There was one reader who had a very dark take on it and thought it was, you know, we're both going to
die.
And I that was not
I don't think that because you know what she says? Yes. Why do I have to outlive everybody? And she's going to outlive everybody.
Yes. But she does definitely particularly when she was so pitifully thin.
Right.
That she, I was thinking, is as much our narrator, the woman who's suffering, as is the dog.
What is this telling you about the way you're viewing old age?
Well, when I was writing it was very much on my mind, how am I going to enter into this experience? And the only thing I would like to do is to be graceful about it and to carry on in some way.
You know, there's always that, the imprints on the couch.
Yes.
And she's there in the old house. She's handled it with dignity.
Yes.
And I know that's what we all want.
We all want to do that. Yes, I do.
But don't believe we can. But who knows until we're there, right?
You don't know until you're there. And in the last few years, I've had a very different view of age and getting old. And I'm determined not.
Not to get old?
Not to get old. Just to stay very rigorous and vigorous. I find when you're with other people, too, who are in your age group or closer or somehow, people can be very intimate quickly. Older people.
Oh, really?
I that was my impression. When I was flying here yesterday, my seatmate was a pilot from Indiana, and he was 73. And mm-hmm. at the very end of the conversation, too, he was coming here to collect his wife and his dog, and his daughter had cancer but was starting treatment And it seemed that she was going to come out of the woods, which was wonderful. But anyway, he was telling me all of these things. He was being he was the kindest person and talking about politics. And I'm in the flyover state, and you're in one of those states. And I thought, and at the very, very end, he knew how nervous I was in flying. I'm not a good flyer. And so he kept talking to me and turning me away from the window. And then at one point, he wanted to point out the flaps and landing.
And he was a pilot.
And he was a pilot and loved planes. And so he was helping me through all of that. And I thought, this is the nicest thing anybody's done in a while. And then at the very end, I was wishing him good luck and everything. And he said, yeah, well, you know, I just got to call myself and something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. Cancer. This man had cancer, but the whole time, I don't know. I thought, I didn't have conversations like this with people.
But I do like this idea of talking to folks within, you know, a little older or in your age group too, because they are so candid. And in the same way this story helped you, it also helps you find your way.
Yes.
So the pilot, that's very nice.
It was. It was one of the nicest things that's ever happened to me. I was profoundly touched.
Is writing your garden?
A lot of it is like gardening. Gardening and writing are very, very similar. I've watched my husband garden, and the garden he's made over the last 20 years, and the same kind of editing applies. You have to move things, and things don't work. And
a lot of weeds.
Yes, and weeds, and there's some words that are thuggish and big, and they're pummeling the others, and you have to figure out how to move it. And you're never satisfied, I think.
And we got to keep the Duchess of Albany alive.
That's right.
The heart.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Broadcast from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, you've been listening to Arts and Letters. Thanks for joining us. To check out past episodes, go to artsandlettersradio.org. Leave us a comment there and let us know what you've thought about the program. Thank you to musician and songwriter extraordinaire Silas Haidt for his beautifully textured soundscape. Thank you to actor David Wallace for lending your voice. Thank you to musician Adam Simon for performing the Gilbert and Sullivan patter song.
As someday it may happen that a victim must be found, I've got a little list, I've got a little...
A special thanks to Mary Ellen Cubitt for the story editing advice. Thank you to Adam Simon of Simon Sound for mastering the program. Thank you to Sticky's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack for keeping music alive and well in Arkansas. Generous funding for Arts and Letters was provided by the Arkansas Humanities Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you to writer Christine Scott for her beautiful story and for the reminder to take stock in the permanence of absence. For Arts and Letters, I'm J. Bradley Minnick. Let's heed these words from Joan Didion. Marriage is memory. Marriage is time. Marriage is not only time, it is also, paradoxically, the denial of time.